All right, Marshall, we can proceed.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Flory, Judge Riley, Judge Smith, the Honorable James B. Flory presiding.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Court of Appeals. We've been doing these WebEx arguments for a couple of months now, and they seem to have worked out good. So if for any reason you can't hear me or you lose connection, then please signal by raising your hand or waving at us or something so that we know what's going on. Can everybody hear me now, Ms. Ward?
You're a little bit better now.
Okay. And is it Mr. Smith? Can you hear me?
It is. You cut a little bit in and out at times, but I think I can catch the gist of it. Thank you.
Hopefully it'll be good. You know, I'm actually 180 miles north of you folks right now. So, and it's been working good so far, but hopefully it'll continue here. There's a timer on the screen. Can everybody see the timer?
I see the timer at the top, I believe. It says 15.
Right.
Zero.
Okay, so you can keep an eye on that. I'll let you know if you're getting over your time so we can conclude the argument. So we'll call the case then. The one other comment I'll have is we found that it works really good if when you're not speaking, you have your microphone on mute. Otherwise, we pick up shuffling papers and things like that. So if you could do that, that would be appreciated. Otherwise, we'll call the case. It's Eric Clinton versus Gabriella Linder, court file A19-1308. Each side here will have 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if they wish. And as you begin your arguments, I would ask that you identify yourselves for the record that we keep of the arguments also. So with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Latessa Ward, and I represent the appellant in this case, Gabriella Linder. Ms. Linder requests that this court reverse the lower court's order that is the subject of this appeal. That order effectively changes a joint physical custody arrangement between the parties that was court ordered in May of 2016 to sole physical custody for dad because of the severe limitation on mom's parenting time. The court severely limits the parenting time that mom has now. It took it from a very liberal access schedule while mom was living in Nevada, and a 5225 schedule, which was a default schedule when mom was living in Minnesota, to one weekend a month, 1 3-day period a month for mom, without any finding of endangerment, without any analysis whatsoever on the best interest factors. In addition, the court's order severely restricts mom's parenting time in a few ways. It takes mom's ability to decide as a parent who should pick up her child, who the child can spend time with in mom's absence. And it also requires mom to make sure the child attends the activities that dad schedules for the child during that 3-day period that she has once a month. So those terms are onerous. The court order, I'm sorry. Judge Wally, I'm sorry, I cannot hear you. I assume there's a question.
No.
I can hear the court now.
You can hear yes. Me now?
Yes, Judge Riley.
Okay. So I have three questions for you. I just want to understand. The first one may be the easiest one because it's yes or no. You raised the constitutional issue in your issue 5. I couldn't see where that was raised in the district court. Did you raise that in the district court?
I believe that we did explain to the court. Yes, I'm sure that we raised, explained that the court sanctions were effectively not allowing mom to exercise her right of redress. But we're most concerned with respect to the constitutional issue.
Well, I just, if you could at the end of this, I just couldn't find it in the district court record. So I would ask you to submit something that points out to us where it is in the district court record. So.
Okay. At the end of the oral argument or after we're finished with the oral argument?
You can send us a letter with the presiding judge's permission. He can pick a time frame for that to happen.
Your Honor, actually, with respect to the constitutional issue, we have argued and we argue to this court that the court sanctions, in particular with the June 2019 order.
I understand that. I just need to see where you raise that so that the district court could rule on the constitutionality of it.
Okay. And also, Your Honor, it is before this court, that issue of the constitutionality is because the court sanctioned Ms. Linder with its June 2019 order. And so
That brings me to my second question. As I read the record, there were three orders that either sanctioned or imposed attorney's fees for one reason or another on your client. And I am not clear which particular order you are appealing.
With respect to this referee, Hutchison, who first heard a motion in this case, I believe it was on 2017, September of 2017. That was the first motion that he heard in this case. He issued sanctions after that motion, and I believe that hearing was.
So, are you appealing those sanctions?
Not the November 2017 sanctions. We were out of time, and I was not representing Ms. Linder at the time.
Okay, I just am trying to clarify. And so then there was a judgment entered July 3rd, 2018 on an order that sanctioned your client for almost $3,000. Are you appealing that order?
Yes.
Even though it's from 2018?
Yes. From 2018, yes.
And you don't think that's untimely?
I believe that we brought our motion for those sanctions 6 months after they were entered, because we filed our motion in December of 2018.
Okay, so then you think you have a right to appeal the July 3rd, 2018 judgment imposing fees and sanctions on your client?
We requested that referee Hutchison vacate those judgments because they were the sanctions from 2018.
And then you're appealing the June 30th, 2019 judgment for $5,650. Is that right?
Yes, I don't have the exact number, but it is the June 2019 sanction that we are appealing.
So there are the two sanction orders that you're appealing, one from 2018 and one from 2019.
That is correct. And I would just like to clarify for the court that the original sanctions, we do believe they were designed to limit Ms. Linder's constitutional rights. But I was not involved in that case, and I didn't make that argument. But with respect to June 30th of 2019, primarily that's where our constitutional argument we believe is most prominent.
And then my third question has to do with where your client's living. At the time of the hearing and the time of this order, she was living in Nevada, as I understand it.
That is correct. And we requested an opportunity for the child to have an evidentiary hearing so that the child could possibly move to Nevada. We are no longer requesting that because Ms. Linder has relocated to Minnesota because of all of this.
So then let me ask you this, does that render this whole issue moot? Because under the original parenting time, it was paragraph A, if mother returns to Minnesota, but the judge decided under paragraph B, if mother remains in Nevada.
That is correct, but the judge, what mom requested was alternative relief. She wanted to remain in Nevada and she wanted to come to Minnesota two times a month and exercise parenting time with her child.
I know, but that, as I asked earlier, isn't that moot if she now is living in Minnesota?
The issue of relocation is moot. The issue of the child, mom having one weekend a month is not moot, and her request, her alternative request that parenting time is scheduled on a week on and week off basis is not moot.
But the issue that was, that the family court decided and that is on appeal now was premised on paragraph B, that the mother remained in Nevada. You are telling us that she now is back in Minnesota. And so why isn't all of this moot? Because it doesn't apply. She's living here now. She's not in Nevada.
Because the court has entered an order. Well, first of all, she was not living in Nevada at the time of the appeal. And the court has...
But she was living in Nevada at the time of the motion. I think you said.
Absolutely. I misspoke just now. She was living in, when we filed for appeal, she did not move back to Minnesota until October. So she did that because it was because of the court's order, which essentially changed the nature of the parenting time and custody agreement. And Ms. Linder has been in Minnesota, Minnesota since October, and dad is still holding her to the one weekend a month.
So she's still, Ms. Ward, if I may, so is the governing parenting time still, you're saying paragraph 40 of the most recent order at addendum 32, is that it, where it's shall have parenting time 1 weekend per month in Minnesota beginning Friday at 4 p.m. until Monday, et cetera? Okay, so that remains the parenting time order, although she, mom is back in Minnesota. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I believe that the effect of this appeal is to deprive the court of jurisdiction on parenting time and custody issues.
But you were the one who filed the appeal, even though there have been changed circumstances now. And the court, as I read the district court orders, was really clear that if she came to Minnesota, you could go back to district court and have parenting time looked at again. The court's order is premised on your client living in Nevada.
That is correct. That is correct. The court's order is premised on that. But our experience with this court is that she gives the dad whatever he asks for. I mean, there's just no question about that. Everything dad has asked for, primarily, with few exceptions, and most of them having to do with money and mom, dad's requesting that mom get a psychological evaluation and some other things before she brings a motion has been done in dad's favor. We're very concerned about the whether this court is biased in light of the continuous sanctions that are awarded and, for dad. I'm sorry. My screen went blank, I'm sorry. We're very concerned about that. We've got the sanctions issue. And the court actually did agree that because of this appeal, the lower court did, felt that this was, this issue is before the Court of Appeals. And I'm going to put that in context. Because of COVID-19, we made a specific request of the court that mom be given temporary sole physical custody during this time period. And the court agreed with us that this was a different situation that would allow the court to exercise jurisdiction over the custody issue. And that was the emergency nature of it. So we just view this as the fact that this court, that custody has been essentially changed.
So can I ask, aside from your view that the court is, the judge is biased, is there any other barrier that you faced right now to seeking relief based on changed circumstances of returning to Minnesota?
Other than this appeal, I would say no. But with the concern about the sanctions, every time mom comes to the court and is sanctioned, that is a concern, the constitutional issue. That's primarily the concern. I'd like to point out, if the court doesn't have any other questions, that there was no finding of endangerment. And what we believe happened here is that custody has been changed with the court's order by taking her from the position of having nearly a equal parenting time opportunity. The court limited mom to 1 weekend a month and some other weeks in Nevada. So that's a little bit unclear. I'd like to touch on the sanctions issue also. The court failed 100% to even address the issues, the substantive issues with mom. Did not do it with respect to dad's extensive work schedule. Didn't even mention it. Try to, undermine the argument by suggesting that it's only on occasion when the child was with a girlfriend. Same thing happened with the sanctions. The court did not address the fact that those sanctions were based on discovery requests that mom didn't have a legal obligation to answer. I see my time is up now.
There's a little time due to some technical, issues. So I'll let you go another minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. The courts absolutely have the discretion to determine matters of parenting time with respect to children. However, there was an order in place in this case that allowed mom to have liberal access with 10 days notice. This court severely changed that order without an evidentiary hearing, reduced mom's time to 3 days a month, regular parenting time, and allows the minor child to be with a third party rather than mom. The court did not even address the alternative relief which was sought by mom, and that was, can I live in both Minnesota and in Vegas and exercise equal parenting time? The court said, just summarily decided that was not appropriate for the child's age. There was no finding. There was no argument, no evidence presented that it would harm the child in any way. Dad is gone from the child all of the time, up to $100 a week or more, and a third party is spending that time with the child. That interferes with mom's ability to bond with and parent her child. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Ward. You'll have 5 minutes of rebuttal if you wish. Mr. Smith, you may proceed on behalf of the respondent.
Thank you. If it please the court, Attorney Zachary Smith on behalf of respondent Eric Clinton. Despite the technical difficulties earlier, I'm hoping everyone can hear me okay, and please wave at me or something if you can't. There are many issues in this appeal. I'm going to try to go a bit in order to follow along with the appellant's brief just to keep things organized. My understanding of the first issue under appeal is denial of appellant's request to modify the custody labels The court dismissed the matter at the initial Nice-Peterson stage without proceeding with an evidentiary hearing. Of course, the court made findings that appellant did not put forth a prima facie case to prove endangerment in order to move forward with an evidentiary hearing. The court correctly noted that appellant would be required to put forth facts to meet all four factors in order to move forward, including that there was endangerment, that there was a change in circumstances, that the move was in the best interest of the child, and that the harm is outweighed by the good. Appellant based her argument for her request on two factors. One was an incident in which a neighborhood dog nipped the child that, you know, required some paper stitches. And the other is the issue of my client's work schedule. My client is and has been through the entirety of this proceeding. He's a St. Paul firefighter. You can imagine his work is a little stressful right now. He works 24-hour shifts. They rotate. He has a rotating schedule. He works a typical number of hours, even though the hours that he works may not be typical. The main part of this, though, is that this has been an issue the entirety of these proceedings. He had this job when the original custody decree was ordered. The specific issue of my client's work schedule has been brought up four times by appellant now, with the exact same exhibits, the exact same arguments, the exact same everything. So it certainly is not a change in circumstances that my client works a significant amount of hours. And I think it's also notable that the hours that he does work typically are when the child is in school or at nighttime sometimes. And yes, by nature, his significant other, who has resided in the house with both Mr. Clinton and the child for several years now, yeah, sometimes she does pick up the slack and is there overnight. But I'm not sure what the alternative is when mom lives in Nevada. The court did modify parenting time on my client's request to this motion. As Ms. Ward correctly stated before, the parenting time was set up as kind of a dual plan, one with parenting time if she's residing in Nevada and a different schedule if she resides in Minnesota. My client requested that the vague parenting time if she was to reside in Nevada be clarified with an actual schedule because, as the court found, the parties had extreme difficulties in working through a vague schedule together. And frankly, the statute 571175 sub D5 requires the court to set forth a specific schedule where you can determine the number of overnights upon request of a party. That's what my client did. The court, in their order, took great pains to try to get mom as much parenting time as possible. The fact of the matter is we have a young elementary school age child, and it's difficult when we have a parent who lives 1,500 miles away to do equal parenting time. Throughout this case, mom has made, I believe, four requests now to have equal parenting time while she lives in Nevada on a week on, week off, or 2 week on, 2 week off basis. And the court has found that that's just not in a child's best interest, especially not at that age. It's not a, I believe appellant is arguing that the court's new parenting time schedule is a de facto modification of custody. And I believe appellant is basing that argument on the notion that reasonable parenting time while she's in Minnesota is equivalent to unlimited parenting time while she's in Minnesota. But that's not the case. The court, my client presented and the court found credible a calendar that demonstrated that mom had exercised something in the nature of 30 to 35 overnights of parenting time under the old schedule, and that the new schedule actually increased her amount of parenting time in Minnesota over what she had been exercising under the old schedule. And in addition to that, it gave her more parenting time while she was in Nevada than the prior order did. So I don't believe it can be said that this is a reduction at all in mom's parenting time. In fact, it represents an increase in mom's parenting time and defines it so that it's not left kind of vague and for the parties to figure out as they had been, which hadn't been working for them.
So, Mr. Smith, this is Judge Riley. Do you think that if mother is no longer living in Nevada, but is living in Minnesota, has returned to Minnesota, do you think that this appeal on this issue is moot? Do you think that we go back to paragraph A of the original parenting time order?
No, the court addresses what happens in their most recent order if mom moves back to Minnesota, which I understand she has. The court says that in the event that mom moves back to Minnesota, they will strongly consider increasing mom's parenting time, but the parties must attend mediation first. There's nothing stopping us from going to mediation to address this request and then going in front of the court based on if mom is living here. That likely is a change in circumstances to address an expansion of mom's parenting time. That's the correct route to follow. Did you have a-
where is that precisely in the order? I just wanted to see it.
In the most recent court order, I would try to pull it up in front of me on my computer, but I would be afraid that I would lose all
okay.
of you. I apologize with the technical issues, but I know I'm happy to provide a citation later on, but I know there was a specific paragraph that said mom's remedy if and when she returns is for the court to consider expansion, but the parties must attend mediation first.
Okay, we'll find it.
Okay, thank you.
But it's in the most recent order that's in the addendum. Mm-hmm.
It's in the most recent order that's under appeal right now.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Sure thing. To address a couple other issues.
Well, that brings me to another question for you. I asked Ms. Ward exactly which orders that impose sanctions and attorney's fees she thinks that this court has jurisdiction to hear the appeals of. What do you think?
Well, certainly the most recent order that awarded attorney's fees in the amount of it was $5,000 or something. Clearly, they have the right to appeal that award of attorney's fees. The appeal also, what I understand their argument to be is that we have the ability to appeal these several year old attorney's fees because the court denied our request to, I believe, reopen that prior award. So what I understand the argument to be is appellant is not directly appealing the prior award of those attorney's fees. They're appealing the court's decision to not reopen those based on the inadvertence, mistake, or fraud standard. So we believe if the court is going to consider looking at those attorney's fees, it's not looking at whether those old attorney's fees were proper, but whether the court was incorrect in declining to reopen that issue under the mistake, fraud, excusable neglect standard. And I see screens have frozen in front of me. I hope everyone is still able to hear me.
I've been able to hear everything you've said, Mr. Smith, so.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And Mr. Smith, just to be clear on those prior orders, they were they appealable? Were they reduced to judgment and appealable, the attorney's fees, at the time?
Absolutely. At the time, they were appealable.
And then it's now, as what I understand you're saying, what I understand the case to be, it's a review of the district court's decision not to vacate or to not reconsider it.
Correct. That's what we believe. Absolutely. So we believe an appeal of that order in and of itself is not timely, but she does. Appellant has the right to appeal the court's decision not to reopen them. Hopefully everyone can still hear me. I'll just move forward unless there's any further questions. With regards to the argument that there is judicial bias at play here, I will note that this case has an extensive district court history. There have been four judicial officers involved in this case. Three of the four have explicitly made written findings in their orders that they found appellant to lack credibility. Two of the four have issued monetary sanctions, and the fact that orders have been issued that have favored my client does not demonstrate by default judicial bias. Perhaps it demonstrates that my client is trying to be reasonable and be a father and do the right thing here. I believe the court has taken great pains and allowed my appellant great leeway to proceed in this matter. And frankly, the issue of judicial bias was not ever brought up to the court, and I don't believe it's ripe for appeal as there hasn't been a decision issued by the district court on this matter. Similarly, this is the first argument that's been made about the constitutionality of the sanctions that were imposed on appellant. Frankly, the argument amounts to appellant has been sanctioned by the court with attorney's fees, thus chilling her ability to bring further motions in the court. That's effectively saying that the entire statute allowing a court to award attorney's fees is thus unconstitutional. I believe there's quite a bit of case law that has upheld the ability of the court to sanction a party with conduct-based fees and need-based fees, and the court has made findings, I believe, on four separate occasions now specifying the conduct of appellant that has unreasonably contributed to the length and expense of these proceedings, and the court's following the statute and case law in doing so, and it's perfectly constitutional to do that. Frankly, unless there's any other questions, the court has my client's brief. I think I've argued as much as I need to without being duplicitous here.
I just wanted to say, counsel, I think what you apropos of what you were talking about earlier with the future modification. So I think that's paragraph 7 and 8 on addendum 42, future modification and a mandatory mediation. Is that what you were referring to? And then with respect to the constitutionality, with respect to the constitutional challenge as to the $5,000 plus that was imposed last July, is that an issue we can address on appeal, or was there anything after that final order that appellant would have to do in order to preserve that issue?
Well, first, thank you for doing my work for me and finding that citation. Second, I believe that the issue of constitutionality of a statute, specifically and how it applies in this case, would have had to have been brought up by appellant at some point. This is a new argument on appeal, which my understanding is to say that the appellant's argument is effectively that conduct-based attorney's fees are unconstitutional because they prevent someone from seeking relief from the court. And that's the first we've heard of this argument, and I don't believe it's properly brought.
Okay. I was just wondering, I mean, if it's an as-applied challenge and it relates to the imposition of fees in the order, was there a requirement to bring a post-order motion somewhere? I don't know if that was in the briefing or not, whether that was a forfeited issue or if there was something in between that order and the appeal that the appellant needed to do.
My understanding
that fees were awarded.
Sure thing. My understanding is you're right, I understand what you're saying, that how would they have brought something to challenge those fees under a constitutional standard because there's been nothing intervening. I understand that, and I don't disagree. If appellant wants to make the argument that this is their first opportunity to challenge these fees on this basis, that seems reasonable.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? All right, seeing none, Ms. Ward, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal. You're muted right there. You go.
Okay. Sorry.
Now you're muted. Now you're good. We can hear you.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I'd like to address the issue of the constitutionality first. We have never claimed that the statute is unconstitutional. The court has the ability, it's well settled that the court has the ability to award attorney's fees based on conduct or need in the family law case. And that is not the point that is made at all. What we're seeing is that the design, the reason why these sanctions are asked for and given is to prevent mom, in this case, from going back to the court, seeking her judicial relief, essentially. And in fact, in his responsive motion, dad asked the court to require mom to undergo a psychological evaluation, to take co-parenting and some other things before she was allowed to come back to the court. That happened also during the proceedings. And that was part of his attorney's fees request, that she keeps bringing these things and she keeps increasing his fees. Well, he's the one that's brought all the motions. And then with respect to the issue of mediation, the court is correct. We ask for alternative relief of week on and week off. That was summarily denied. And then the court essentially changed the custody arrangement by giving dad sole physical custody and mom 1 weekend a month. That's the effect of this order. And I think that counsel pretty much admitted that, because the court asked him, well, should we go back to the original order, which says if the parties can't agree, then we'll do the 5-2-2-5 plan. But it should be as equal as possible. And he said, no, we should go to mediation and we should ask the judge to do that. Well, we shouldn't have to, because there was an order that said that if mom is living back in Minnesota, then they should have equal parenting time. And the default was 5-2-2-5. We asked for week on and week off, and that was denied. The other thing I want to make sure that I don't overlook is, and with respect to that same issue, there is a mediation requirement. Dad refused to do mediation on custody and parenting time before we brought the motion, which is why we had to bring the motion. We feel that it's Ms. Linder and I, as an officer of the court, feels that it is futile to go to this referee with request. He is going to give dad what he's asked for. He always has. He did it the very first time that Ms. Linder was before him, and that was for an award of sanctions for failure to engage in discovery that the court had no jurisdiction to hear, because there was no matter pending before the court at the time that Mr. Smith propounded that discovery. But yet, Ms. Mom, even though she attempted to answer it and she said it was an abuse of discovery, she was sanctioned. And there was nothing in the order that says what she answered correctly versus what she didn't answer correctly. And then she was sanctioned again. So I'm also concerned about the belief or the suggestion that the judicial officer took great pains to give mom as much time as possible. That's absolutely not true. He reduced her time to 1 weekend a month when she asked for a week on and a week off. And there's no reason given other than, well, it's not good for the child at his age. Dad is away from the child for most of the week. A third party gets mom's parenting time, and that's an interference of her rights as a mother, her fundamental rights as a mother that this court has recognized. So we do not believe that the issue with respect to the court's decision denying mom week on and week off, it doesn't matter, she's living in Nevada, she could be in Nevada, she could be in Minnesota, but she offered who come to Minnesota. So for the court to say it's not practical because she's living in Nevada, well, mom was the one that had to bear all of the expense in exercising her parenting time And she would have been flying back and forth if she felt the need to, or she would have stayed in Minnesota. But the court just took that opportunity away. I understand my time is up.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Warden. Thank you, counsel, for your briefing and arguments on the matter. There was a request by Judge Riley during the initial argument here to submit a letter to the court containing references to the record where it was the issue of the constitutional issue of violation of the right to seek judicial relief was raised before the district court. And are you still requesting that information, Judge Riley?
I'm not. I think it's been answered for me.
Okay, then there's nothing further to do. So we'll take the matter under advisement here today then, and we'll have a decision on this matter within 90 days. Thank you.
Thank you.
We stand adjourned.
Thank you.